Welcome back to RBKD. It is the Bat Tuesday edition of RBKD. Hanging out here in Harrion Studios. Feels good to be in studio hanging out. We love being out amongst the people, but I like being here at home, too. It's a kind of comfort to it. Get a chance to see all the producers face-to-face. Couple man Patrick Davis twisting and tweaking the dials today. And he is actually DJing The Bat Tuesday, 105.3 The Bat. We play songs from our sister station today. He does a great job, as always, at It's Patrick Davis in the Twitterverse. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. And my man Kevin Dunn at KevinDunn01 in the Twitterverse. Dallas Cowboys.
The boys.
Hoping to get back on the winning track, I should say. They have, I think they're 2-3 in their last five games after starting 6-1. And the Cowboys kind of want to get back to really their identity. I think they lost their identity somewhere after that 6-1 start, especially offensively.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, I don't think they really lost their identity defensively. Defensively, I think it was injuries up front. With guys like Neville Gallimore being out, DeMarcus Lawrence, who just came back, by the way, last game. And then Randy Gregory also going out, too. But Michael Parsons, of course, has been a force of nature. I'm going to talk about him in Roger Rant the Day a little bit later on. But the defense, they're opportunistic, and
so
they make
they're
plays.
They're going to get hit on the end.
They're a playmaking, opportunistic defense. They're not a solid defense, you're right. They're not well-built necessarily, but they do make plays. And for an offense like the Cowboys, which is one of the highest-scoring offenses in the NFL, and was consistently earlier on than it has been most recently, they should take advantage of extra possessions. And we haven't seen that enough lately from the Cowboys. And I think that's the identity they get back to. Defense makes plays. Yes, like you said, they get beat, but it doesn't matter unless you're going to score 35 with the Cowboys,
mm-hmm.
which is really tough for most teams to do. As long as they can get extra possessions for their team, they usually are okay. But I think now in this game, Conor versus Washington, it's a big game for the Cowboys, in my opinion, too, because Washington's hot and they're gritty. I don't think they're necessarily well coached, and they're not all that talented, but they are. Man, they will play.
They're
with
opportunistic
you.
Too.
Yeah, they'll play
at,
with
at a less version than
totally
the Cowboys,
agree.
But they could win that game. So ESPN came out with kind of their health rating for every team out there, and was digging through that today. So the Cowboys, they've had 11 players on IR, or they have 11 players on IR, and then they've had 37 starts missed because of injury.
That's a lot. Yeah.
You go through it. Dak, Tyron Smith, DeMarcus Lawrence, Randy Gregory, Donovan Wilson, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Zeke, Neville Gallimore, and that didn't even include Lael Collins.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point because he was a suspension. Well, that wasn't an injury, but it was a suspension still. So
still
missed. Services. And do they are they counting COVID? Or this is just
yes, they are.
So they are counting COVID.
They're counting COVID.
Missing games.
They got Amari in there.
Okay, well, this is the thing about the Cowboys, offensively. Last week, and I threw this stat out there, I think Bobby Belt's the one that threw it out there via Twitter, so I'll give him credit, that was the first game all season where they had Zach Martin and Tyron Smith and Michael Gallup, Amari Cooper, and CeeDee Lamb all together in one game. Of course, Dak, too.
Yeah, because Zach missed first game.
Yeah, so that was the first time they had all of those guys together. Now, you didn't really see that materialize offensively for the Cowboys. They had to win that game, with their defense and just being making plays, like four picks in that game for the Cowboys versus the Saints. But defensively, I think they need a pass rush. And Michael Parsons, like I said, he's a freak in his own right. I mean, he's a Category 5 force of nature from the edge. But they can use him in so many different ways when they get their organic pass rush back, which is DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory. Remember, early on in the season, the Cowboys were playing more man defense than any other team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
They were playing a ton of man defense. They could do that because they were getting a lot of pass rush early on from Randy Gregory, from Michael Parsons, and also from DeMarcus Lawrence. When they started losing those guys, they lost their ability to man up because they weren't able to get pressure on the opposing quarterbacks consistently enough.
And that's where Anthony Brown gets exposed.
Exactly.
Diggs is going to make plays. He's going to give some up. But, yeah, you're right. No, it's really about getting after the quarterback. And the other thing with Micah Parsons, I know you're going to talk about him coming up in Rod's Rant.
Oh, he's a freak, man.
He's a freak, but you want to have that versatility. You don't want to just have to use him as a pass rusher.
Great point. Yep. Then you pigeonhole yourself.
And that's the spot they've been in.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Then you actually.
He's great at it. I get it.
But then you make him more predictable.
Yes.
In terms of where the offense can find him and then how they can limit him. So I totally agree with you. I think he's more of a weapon when you can move him around that defense. But, you know, the Cowboys offense, I'll give you a great stat about the Cowboys offense that is pretty cool. That, no, it's not pretty cool, but it's a bad stat. But it shows you that the offense is in a kind of a downward swing right now. Through the first 9 games of the season, the Cowboys offense had 17 drives that went 3 and out. So 17 3 and outs through the first 9 games.
Yeah.
They've had 18 in the last 3.
Okay. Well, that says everything right there.
Right? So the offense, and that puts, as you know, puts the defense in a precarious position when you end up kind of throwing them out in, you know, in no man's land without a lot of rest, not a lot of time for adjustments being made on the sideline, all those types of things. So I think the Cowboys got to get back to their identity, which is, I mean, it's still the second best scoring offense in the NFL. So I'm being critical of them. But I think Cowboys fans who know this team very well know that lately that offense has not been as lethal.
They haven't looked
and adaptable
the same
as it was early on. And Zeke being hurt, that hurts too.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. Yeah. But they're going to be getting some guys healthy. I'm not sure, you know, not sure how quickly Zeke can get back to the Zeke we saw early on in the year or if that can happen this year. But Randy Gregory, Neville Gallimore, they are on track to return for Washington. Dallas, a 4.5-point favorite in that game. It's a game they should win, but you've talked about it. Heard Craig during his report. He was actually talking about two of the teams that we had mentioned that are playing a lot better right now, Miami and Washington. But the Cowboys get healthy, they're in a good spot, man. They're in a good spot in the NFC East. They've been they've had the rope to really kind of struggle here and still not feel overly threatened in the NFC East. But it's more than that. They're going to win this division as long as Dak and main guys like that stay healthy. It's about how well are they playing. Can they get back to that rhythm that we saw on offense and defense early in the year?
Yeah. No, I'm interested to see how they – because the pass rush for Washington, right, that's the one of the strengths of the team is their pass rush. So that's going to be a challenge for the Cowboys. Jerry Jones went on 105 through the fan. And Jerry Jones, it's got to be upsetting for Mike McCarthy. He'll go on 105 through the fan and reveal – tactics,
yeah,
like strategy, and
he's on all the time,
and he loves it, and he's really great, but he'll reveal strategy on there, and he revealed that they are going to use that. First of all, Lyle Collins is going to continue to start instead of Terrence Steele,
okay,
at that right tackle.
Well, Steele was dealing with an injury too, right?
He was dealing with an injury, but I'm assuming he's back. Here's the quote from Jerry Jones. Quote, you've got an improved Collins. You got a Steele that we know and are very confident he can play at the right tackle. Just play well there. And so, in doing so, we will use the fact that we got Collins at his best this year. We got Steele, and we'll use that as one of the or a way to help our running game. We will do that. We'll just use that relative to any other formations that we use. We'll have a big guy in that you would normally have at tight end that will help us out, end quote. So
okay.
He's going to use whichever one doesn't start, and I'm assuming that's going to be Terrence Steele. They're going to use him as the Patriots did in that game, 6th offensive lineman.
Gotcha.
Out there and just run downhill.
Or you could see folks. Connor Williams as a fullback.
You could see that. They got that
The Hulk package. Yeah. They kind of flipped roles with Connor McGovern and Connor Williams.
Yep, that's a great point. And honestly, Connor Williams is more athletic than Connor McGovern.
Yeah.
And I'm not hating on Connor McGovern. I'm talking about based on all of the measurables at the combine, he's a way more athletic
freak.
Connor
McGovern have a touchdown in college?
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't know. They followed the man's career that good, but great point, though. That's because, yeah, he's really, really, I mean, Connor Williams.
No, the point
is really
of that,
though,
that Connor Williams play did show his athleticism
in college at West Virginia. He's known for being very, very athletic. I mean, he was considered in
He wasn't drafted because of his technique.
The highest percentage. Also, a great point.
I mean, that's not a shot at Connor Williams. That's a shot at Herb Hand.
No, but I'm with you on that, too. So the Cowboys should be as healthy as they've been on defense all year long, potentially, in this game versus Washington. That's why I feel confident the Cowboys can cover the 4.5.
Oh,
is this, is this Washington or in Dallas?
Where is this one?
That's what, Patrick? I need to know. You know what? That shouldn't matter as much. Make sure I get that stat right. Make sure I get my stat right.
Get your stats right.
This is why that shouldn't matter as much. And this was prior to last week, all right? So It's in Washington. Okay, thank you very much. I have not updated this stat for this current, most recent week of games for the NFL. But NFL teams at home, all right? NFL home teams against the spread this year, 77-101-1.
Hold on, give that again.
Just like I said, this is prior to this most recent week of games.
Right.
But NFL home teams against the spread this season, 77-101 against the spread. On pace for the worst against the spread season for home teams in the Super Bowl era.
Just doesn't matter, does it?
Doesn't matter as much as it used to. It used to be one of those things that really matters. So I think the Cowboys should still cover the number because they're as healthy as they've ever been. Well, I think because of the Zeke thing, maybe I'm a little off there. But I think they're as healthy as they've been all season on offense and defense.
I think they are, too.
With Zeke aside.
And especially with the defense. Dan Quinn talked about that yesterday, too. He said, it does make me think about the whole crew and where we are in our third block of the season. There's excitement with that. And I think we've had 33 defensive players who have had meaningful snaps so far.
Yeah.
He said, if you told me back on September 1st that we would play 33 guys, I might have said, oh, crap. But he didn't say crap.
Yeah. No, because he thought that means we're doing something wrong and right. that we got to play guys because yeah, guys aren't playing well. That wasn't the case. They had a lot of injuries, as you mentioned, and a lot of guys missed time. But he's done a really good job of adapting the system to the talent. We all assumed, oh, man, he's from, you know, the architect of the Legion of Boom. He's going to be big into the single high cover three pattern matchup zone. That's what he's going to do. Turns out, talk about breaking tendency. They're one of the top man coverage units in the NFL. They play as much man as any of the top five units in the league, and they've done a really good job considering how the players they've lost, DeMarcus Lawrence, Randy Gregory, of adapting the system to the players and to their skill sets. And Micah Parsons is the best example of that, mm-hmm. how he moves him around week to week.
We didn't even mention Tristan Hill.
Oh, yeah. He missed time. It's one-game suspension, correct?
One-game suspension.
So he'll be back, too.
He'll be back as well.
There you go. Good point.
And look, really what they've been able to do, and Quinn kind of talked about that, is with the oh, crap, he actually threw a couple S-bombs to the media. I like Dan Quinn. Because he followed that up saying, now that I look at it, I think, oh, crap. It's pretty cool.
The media loves him.
Yeah, they do.
The media, they love Dan Quinn down there because apparently he's been really, really an open book, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. But you may not have been able to realize how good Jayron Kearse is if Donovan Wilson's not out. Like, I think it's built depth, and if you get all these guys back, they're going to have a really deep defense and some different guys that they can play around with.
First year in the system.
Yeah, it's been impressive.
You can only assume they're going to get better, man.
My biggest question with Dan Quinn was, is he going to try and do what he did in Seattle in Dallas?
Yep.
He's rethought kind of how he's looking at stuff. He's playing with his personnel, which is what good coaches do.
He's doing a fantastic job for the Cowboys. Cowboys coaching staff, I mean, this year, I know that can be critical because I know they're 2-3 in their last five games.
No, they've done a good job.
But they've done a good job considering the disaster of an S show and a fuster cluck it was last year. Because we assumed last year, man, they got a clean house. They made one move. And it was a Dan Quinn move. That was a big move they made. They got rid of Mike Nolan, and that was a smart move.
Patrick, you're a big Cowboys fan, correct?
I was a Texans fan. I've stepped away because I don't like Cal McNair. But no, I root for the Cowboys.
Okay.
But I was a Texans fan.
You were? That's right.
You renounced your fandom?
Yeah, until Cal McNair sells
the team. Are you serious?
Yeah, until he sells the team.
When did this happen? This is official?
Like 2 years ago.
Oh, you did it way before the Easter Bee and any of that.
No, it was the start of the Easter Bee.
It was
basically when he decided to ruin everything with the franchise. And then you just keep hearing him say stupid things, and you're like, oh, you don't know how this works, do you?
No.
Yeah. You have no clue, and it's I believe there should be a rule that if a child takes over a team, they get like 5 years and then have to sell it if the team's still garbage.
Yeah, he's
like, you did nothing to earn this.
He's Tommy Boy.
Yeah. Like, Mark Davis has done okay with the Raiders. They're not great, but he's done okay with them.
Yeah.
They've moved. They've got a nice new stadium. They've got all the stuff. He's basically driven this team into the dirt. He did nothing to deserve it. His dad just owned the team.
Yeah, there's a lot to that.
Man, I didn't know you're right. I'm not disagreeing with anything you said. I didn't know you had already moved on. Because I think a lot of Texas fans have thought about this. Like, you know what, I might renounce my fandom.
Yeah, but 2 years ago.
But he did it.
He sold the stock at the right time.
I thought they should have brought in Ozzie Newsome and Herm Edwards. Ozzie Newsome and someone like maybe, I don't know, I'm trying to think of another coach, like an old school coach to bring in. Like they needed someone to like steer the ship with the Texans, and they messed that up. Because Ozzie Newsome would have been great. Maybe he stepped down, and Eric DaCosta, I think, stepped up. They should have brought him in then and said, now you don't have to be a GM, but we need someone to advise us. And yeah. he never did that.
And just get rid of the we're going to be the Patriots because you're yeah. not going to be the Patriots.
Oh, you're not
going to
be Patriots.
And they've yeah. been doing that. Like when yep. you read the reports that Bill O'Brien was trying to get fired and all of us could see it. And they were like, you know what? You should probably pick our next general manager. Mm-hmm. You should probably pick everyone who's going to run our team after we fire you. You should probably be in charge of everything. Yeah, are you yeah. trying to get fired? You know what? We'll give you more responsibility.
yeah. Nah, just wasn't smart. Tony Dungy was what I'm thinking about. I don't know why I got hurt.
Dungy, I was thinking.
Up. I apologize.
I didn't know if you were going Dick Vermeil.
No, Dick Vermeil. He'll bring the emotion.
He'd
right.
go in there and cry.
He likes to cry a lot. That's for true.
I just talked to Jack East to me.
All right, let's get to the MVP discussion, yeah. which I got to tell you, there's not a lot of debate about who's going to be the MVP, and I think there should be because I don't think there's anybody who's a clear-cut front runner or, you know, surefire winner right now for the MVP.
And some of the guys that would have been either have leveled off like Dak or Kyler Murray, they've been out or they're out for too long.
Kyler maybe. Murray missed three games, so usually that takes you out of the MVP discussion. But the Kim Kardashian, Nicki Minaj, Serena Williams size, Cardi B size, but he is leading the NFL in passer rating and completion percentage. He also is, I think, number one in average gain and average touchdown percentage as well. And he's on pace to set another all-time franchise mark for completion percentage for the Cardinals and also on the franchise record for passer rating as well. So he, I think, probably should be because the MVP or at least the front runner because he does have at least he is the quarterback of the team with the best record and he does have some of these leading stats. Missed three games.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers got the same issues. So, Aaron Rodgers' stats are awesome, but he missed – well, he had the – Well, he had the controversy. He was immunized. Controversy. Right.
The media could also play into that too,
because they don't really like Aaron Rodgers.
No,
they think he's an a-hole.
I don't think that helped either.
Right. So exactly. So I think he's not going to win it just because of that. Right.
Which is stupid and wrong.
And he missed how many games because of that one? Was it one game he missed because of the toe?
Yeah, it was one, and then he came back on that early. He had like that one day rest and came back and played in that game.
It could have been two. It could have been two, but he was right.
But he had COVID toe. So who is it? Is it Brady?
I don't know.
Is it Brady your leader right now?
Because Patrick Mahomes, the reason he's upset is because he has had to really kind of downgrade his game because teams aren't giving up those big chunk yardage plays to him anymore.
Too high, not blitzing him.
Exactly. So now he's got to work down the field and dink and dunk, and he hates checkdowns, and it's obvious. That's why he has 12 interceptions now in the season. He gets so frustrated dinking and dunking, he tries to take those shots, and when he takes those shots, teams make him pay. So it ain't Patrick Mahomes this year. I think you're right. I think it's Tom Brady.
I mean,
now it's Tom Brady.
I'm looking at DraftKings Sportsbook. Tom Brady plus 175.
I think it's Tom Brady.
Next is Aaron Rodgers at plus 600.
And like you said, he's not going to win it because the media don't like him.
Right.
And he's got the controversy.
They've got Josh Allen fourth at plus 1,000.
No.
That ain't happening.
To me, it's a Kyler Murray, Tom Brady race right now. And Kyler Murray missed three games. Tom Brady, how about this? This is a great stat. So Tom Brady has got, he's got right now, I think it's six games with at least four touchdown passes in the game. Six of those this season. Six. If you go look at every quarterback who's had at least six games with four touchdown passes in a season, they've all won MVP.
Mm.
Dan Marino did in 1984. He had six, won MVP. Peyton Manning did in 2004, had six games with four touchdowns, won MVP. Tom Brady in 2021 has done it, but obviously no MVP just yet. Patrick Mahomes did in 2018. He had seven and won the MVP. Aaron Rodgers also in 2020 had seven such games, won MVP. Peyton Manning in 2013 had nine such games. Good Lord. And won MVP. He had nine games with at least four touchdown passes. What the?
That's nuts.
That is nuts.
That's stupid.
But yeah, so I think based on that stat, Tom Brady's the guy.
Man, 368, four touchdowns in the last one.
He's the guy and the goat, man.
He would definitely be the guy to beat right now. Hey, let me tell you about the spot to go if you want to watch Tom Brady. And is there any, before we get to one and done here, if you weren't going to take Tom Brady, who would you take? Kyler Murray?
I would
assume he gets really hot.
Yeah, but you can't win MVP missing three games unless you start doing some unprecedented historical stuff.
We got 17 games now.
I know, but he's doing well. That's true. I guess so. Tech, if you want to go back kind of the old thing, he'd basically miss two games.
Right.
I still think that's tough. We got to go back and see how many MVPs have missed multiple games in a season. It's got to be rare.
Right. Oh, he could do it, but they're going to have to be people that fall in front of him, namely Brady.
Yeah.
If Brady goes on the pace he's on right now, then it's his.
I would love to say Aaron Rodgers, but I'm with you. The media hates him, and he doesn't care about being liked. So he hasn't. He's not trying to play to the media or ingratiate himself to the media.
Yeah, that's one of the things I like about Aaron Rodgers.
Exactly. It's one of the redeeming qualities about Aaron Rodgers.
All right, let's get to one and done. I'm going to do, we're talking coaches here, and I've got two coaches in mind. The GOAT at the pro level and a guy who may have missed his opportunity at the college level.
Like that five-star recruit at Kentucky, he's been here, and he's gonna stay here. It's one and done time. Here's Kevin Dunn.
He was the best defensive coordinator of my childhood, and I really figured that out. I mean, I loved Buddy Ryan and what he did with the 46 defense. They actually, the Mannings got into the bear front and exactly what that is. We saw some bear fronts last night.
Mm-hmm.
But in the next year, 1986, Bill Belichick with Bill Parcells, and the Giants had a physical team. Mm-hmm. I knew that they were talented. They had guys like Leonard Marshall, obviously Banks, and Lawrence Taylor, the best pass rusher we'd ever seen. But I knew he was a good DC, but it's really 91 against the Bills in K-Gun that separated him. I mean, you have to really go back, but the thought was that no one's going to be able to stop this offense, right?
Yep.
We really hadn't seen anything like it,
mm-hmm.
and they had all the pieces and the parts to take apart most defenses. It was that game plan that all of a sudden changed how we looked at Bill Belichick.
Yeah, he decided, you know what, let's allow Thurman Thomas to mm-hmm. get whatever the hell he wants, all right? We understand. We'll be physical. We'll rally and tackle Thurman Thomas when he gets the football, but let's make sure that we keep the big play from happening.
Andre Reed, James Lofton.
Yeah, let's be physical with the wide receivers on the outside and limit the big play and force Thurman Thomas to beat us all by himself. And couldn't do it.
It was a brilliant game.
It was a brilliant. Everybody thought it was
a
crazy game plan.
Bill still almost won with Norwood, but still.
Yeah, and the players even said, they thought it was like, that's the craziest damn game plan ever.
What are you doing?
What are you talking about? That's suicide. We're going to lose this game because obviously you got to stop Thurman Thomas. He's like, no. Nobody can really stop Thurman Thomas. What they get mixed up is they try to stop Thurman Thomas, and it's a losing effort, but then they also give up the big chunk yardage plays, and then they're out of the game before they can ever even adjust to the game plan.
It sounded crazy on the surface. And when I think about Belichick, so mm-hmm. Belichick obviously has gone on now to become the greatest coach in NFL history. He's the best head coach of all time. He's got 6 Super Bowl rings as a head coach to go with those 2 as a DC. Let's also not forget, too, about people kind of learning on the job. He probably was better at Cleveland than people think, but that was a failure. And for different reasons. It's not all on him.
Coaching staff was nasty, though.
Saban, I mean, some of the different guys they had on that coaching staff was stupid.
Yeah.
And they got to the playoffs, but ultimately it didn't work. But he really learned how to manage everything and mm-hmm. still have his hands on the game plan. Tlaib was on last night with the Mannings. You see that?
I didn't get a chance to catch it. What did he break down? He got into some good football theory.
Yeah, no, he was good. He was good. And Peyton asked him just straight up. He said, how involved is Belichick with the defense? And Tlaib just laughed and said, he's a defensive coordinator.
He's very involved.
He's like, and Peyton kind of looks and like, oh, I knew you were going to say he's involved, but he's a defensive coordinator.
There you go.
And obviously with also talking to the quarterback about mm-hmm. what he's going to see with the defense, about what his tendencies are. So he's really managed to be a head coach and still be able to bring what he brings to the table, which is that brilliant defensive mind. But the thing I love about Belichick is he will be so exaggerated and aggressive and almost crazy with some of his game plans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a simplistic brilliance too, right? Because he would just go and do it at a level or at a percentage that you just never thought you would. So you can say, look, we're just going to have a straight up rushing attack. Throwing the ball 3 times last night, guys. 3 effing times. 1974, as we pointed out, was the last time you saw that. And I'm sure some of his coaching staffs, the part of the coaching staff, or more importantly, the players, looked at that as they're talking about it throughout the week and thought, it's not going to be 3 passes, right? And I'm sure they didn't have a number down, but they knew that game plan was going to be 98%
mm-hmm.
run. What Belichick does so well is he goes matchup to matchup. And it really is game to game. Mm-hmm. And part of the matchup are also the conditions. And that's what it was last night. It wasn't just what the Bills had, what we have as the Patriots, and what the conditions are bringing us. It was kind of all those things coming together, and it had Belichick. You know, he got a big kick out of last night. And you could tell the fact that he won a football game throwing the ball three effing times.
Yeah. No, he loves that kind of stuff. And he's a football historian. He's probably the foremost NFL historian actually out there. I know it's him and Sable family probably, but he loves historical kind of precedent like that. And winning a football game by working with the elements, not against the elements. Mm-hmm. That's how he would describe it. I remember Tom Brady telling stories about there was rain predicted in the forecast for some of their games, and they'd work with wet footballs all week long. Like he'd come over there and just douse all the footballs in a bucket of water and be like, all right, working with wet footballs all day long.
And he'll do it randomly,
and
too.
And
once again, he'll do it aggressively.
Because he wants you guys to adjust to it.
I heard it was a center who played for them who said it just got out of control. He's just pouring it as I'm about to snap it. And I'm like, coach, it's never going to be getting hit with water like this.
But what if it is? Be prepared for the extreme.
And he's always prepared.
Yep.
And he will ditch game plans and make adjustments on the fly as well as anyone we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And he's connected with every single thing. As you're watching that last night, you can see McDermott, this young coach who had a stupid challenge, had some things, but he was just getting outcoached. He was getting worked.
Which is also why he was so
pissed in the postgame.
There's no shame in that going up against Bill Belichick.
No, it's not. No, it doesn't mean McDermott needs to be fired. Yeah. He's actually done a pretty good job there. But it just goes to show you everything this guy brings to the table, man. He's a chameleon, too. That's the other thing I love about him.
Yep.
So we've seen them throughout the year. They really can, because it goes matchup to matchup, they're able to, with their personnel and also with their game planning, able to just change stripes.
We saw
it in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it specifically the last, I don't know, 5 to 6 seasons with Brady there, where they would go two tights. You're going straight running. I mean, what was the year where they had a completely different offensive identity, and then they got into the playoffs and flipped it and changed? They're not predictable. You don't know what you're going to see.
I forgot which year it was. You're right. They actually were a spread team in a regular season. Then they went to a fullback.
Yes.
Like late in the year when the weather got bad, they went to like a straight up 21 personnel and started running old school offense. My favorite.
I think that was the year they beat the Rams, right?
It might have been that year. I'm not sure which year it was. My favorite story about that year when they won the Super Bowl against the Rams, when the only touchdown was scored, was when the Patriots decided to go 22 personnel, two backs, two tight ends, and they had a fullback on the field with the two backs, by the way, so you might be right about them. That's when they decided to go using a fullback, and then it went empty,
yeah.
And that was the only touchdown drive, because that was the only thing. And Wade Phillips said it later. He says, the only thing I didn't really prepare for. And why? Because there were only 11 plays all year long run by any team of all the games in that season, in that Super Bowl season between the Rams and the Patriots, where a team went empty with 22 personnel with a fullback on the field.
Because
nobody ever does that.
No one ever
does.
Why
the hell would you do that? And that's the only way they were able to score a touchdown against the Wade Phillips and that Rams defense. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But he prepared for it. And the tight end said the night before that they started putting those plays
in.
It
was in the hotel.
They put those plays in the night before the game in the hotel. They said, just in case we need it. Turns out, it's what won him a Super Bowl.
What kind of security do you think he's got set up at the hotel?
I got
when they're in the banquet ball and going over new stuff?
That guy's a monster.
You know, he's got CIA probably all around it.
Oh,
there.
Yeah. He runs that place like a clandestine organization. He does. He does. He really does.
He does. And he gave Joe Dirt, his son, some love after the game.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
What did he say about him?
I say Joe Dirt because he kind of looks
know,
like
that
character. I
know,
but
he does
kind
of keep that. Yeah.
No. I just made giving him a hug as that thing was over. But yeah, we saw a lot.
Isn't he actually listed as the defensive coordinator? Is it him?
Yeah, I think he is.
But we know it's Belichick on the place.
But Daddy runs it. But no, his smile and his enthusiasm, a word you never use with Belichick, on the sideline as that thing was ending was fantastic. I mean, I'm never going to be amazed, or I'm never going to be shocked by anything I see from Belichick, but last night almost took me to that where I'm just laughing. I'm just sitting back laughing. I'm like, oh, my God. They're not throwing the football here.
And he won a game like that.
In the NFL.
Yeah, in the NFL.
Also, quickly, I want to get to Matt Campbell here. Ooh. Matt Campbell, you know what his record is at Iowa State?
I'm cheating, so I'm looking at it right now. That's well.
42-33. Which is good.
That is good.
You know, he had that 3-9 year to start off. He's got a couple 8-5s. He's got the 9-3, which we all look at 2020. But now, with expectations, 7-5 this last year.
Yeah.
We've never had a coaching carousel like this. And, Rod, you asked me, I think it was you. It was
yesterday?
Yeah. That you asked me, sorry, I'm cheating on you with Paul on Monday. That's the only thing.
No, man, that's just good stuff. EGAT, baby.
EGAT. Go check it out. But you asked me, did he miss his timing? And I looked at it a little bit today and just looked at, first off, the coaching carousel and the jobs that he wants. What are the three jobs we were always told that Matt Campbell would finally leave for?
Was it Michigan?
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame?
Mm-hmm.
What was the other
Midwest.
One? Ohio State?
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Those are the three, right? So you've had, but then you had Michigan State open.
Yep.
Like, I know that he's had contact with some people. USC, he doesn't have an agent. USC, LSU, Miami.
Oklahoma?
Does, at some point, he may have to drop some of his needs.
Yeah, drop your standards, man. Your standards are too high.
Yeah.
You're
and,
like,
and
yeah.
the shine's going to come off of you at some point, unless you, look, if he goes 10-2 next year, it'll be right back on. I think he's a good coach. I'm not trying to tell you that I think he's drastically overrated.
I'm
he's 77-48. You're a bigger fan than I am. But I'm a fan of Matt Campbell, but I think he missed his opportunity and missed his chance. He can get another job, but you're not, those three that you wanted, they're not opening up anytime
Notre
soon.
Notre Dame didn't come open like that.
No.
Yeah, and Oklahoma doesn't.
And with Notre Dame,
yet.
I think that was more Notre Dame and Jack Swarbrick who wanted Marcus, and that it was not. I mean, I think he would have taken that. So I think he would have taken that. I think if Ohio State ever opened up and if Michigan ever opened up. But those three don't look like they're opening up anytime soon. And you had so many jobs to at least be a part of the process. And he's still at Iowa State, man.
Could Oregon get him?
That's kind of what I was thinking about because that's the next one.
What's the best Oregon can do? Can they do better than Matt Campbell?
That's a great question.
I mean, I know they can, but I'm saying right now with the market, giving how much.
I think Matt Campbell would be a good hire.
I think he'd be a good
really
hire
good
for
hire
them, too, because he's a culture hire. And I'm not saying that, you know, regionally he doesn't have a fit, but if you can succeed there at Iowa State recruiting-wise, then I think given the resources at Oregon that he'd be able to kind of build a West Coast recruiting base.
So that's the biggest thing. If can he go recruit California?
That is the
That's
question.
The biggest question mark about
with
Oregon.
With Lincoln Riley now.
With Lincoln Riley, which I still think that's one of the reasons, or that at least was on the list of Mario Cristobal saying, you know what, I'm going to Miami. Cristobal was named the guy today. We're going to get into Joe Brady and some possible landing spots later on. I think Oklahoma and Miami make a lot of sense, and I hope it's Miami.
Longhorn fans should hope it's Miami, too. Or, I mean, yeah, because I don't want him to go to LSU either.
No.
Because you could end up playing LSU in a couple of years. And
no.
Yeah.
Go beat the crap out of the ACC. Hey, last, so you know how many ACC championships Miami has?
In the history of the program? Because they hadn't been there as long as you think, right? Because they were in, the Big Eight, or were they?
They were independent a lot, and then there were Big East.
Big East, that's right. Two?
None. 2004, came in, and that was the end of their run. They've had, I believe, five coaches since then. They have, Miami that we grew up with, that dominant program has not been there. And I mean, it was crazy. I was going through it today and I was like, wait a minute, they haven't won an ACC championship ever. They joined the ACC.
I didn't realize that.
And the program went down. The thought was that they were like when Florida State joined the ACC, they won the first four or five. They didn't lose a game until the Virginia game on Thursday night where Warrick Dunn did get across the line. So Warrick Dunn or Travis Minor? Travis Minor.
Yeah.
But it's just crazy that Miami,
you
start
either,
with Cristobal,
actually.
And I think that's probably more of a rebuild project than some people on the outside realize. Miami's been having their issues for a while now, man.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they get kind of lost in shuffle because Florida State's had some issues there, but they kind of been in the same muck that Texas has been in.
Very much so,
Almost the same timetable.
Almost the same timetable. Yeah. In fact, I would say even longer because 2004, 2005, 2006.
Well, yeah, Texas still rolling.
2004, 2009.
Yeah, Texas still rolling. Yeah.
Now, there were some cracks and there were some things you could look at that we've talked about that you'd say, I don't think this is heading in the right direction, but they're still winning in 2008 and obviously 2009. They play for a championship. All right, I want to talk a little coaching there. Had to give the GOAT some love and curious just what Matt Campbell does. I guess he stays in the Big 12. Maybe he does look at Oregon, but Rod.
Maybe he likes Iowa State.
You were, get out of here.
Nobody believes that.
No one buys that. I'm not buying that for Matt Campbell. You don't like Ames, okay? Off the record, coming up next, we've got a coach who went really old school and probably a little too old school.
D.D. Mega doo-doo, I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get they bring the egg comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East. Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! F***ing thing sucks!
Welcome back to RBKD. Time for another edition of Off the Record. And this one actually is about a future opponent coming up for the Texas Longhorns. So the Longhorns, after they play Seton Hall, they're going to play Arkansas Pine Bluff.
Yep, Seton Hall, 23 in the AP, 25 in the coaches' poll.
That's going to be a hell of a test.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they were that good, actually.
They are 7-1. The only time I've seen him was against Michigan. That was on Fox probably like a month ago. Michigan was 4 in the country, and they beat him. So
yeah, no, it's,
that'll help out a little bit with it was just kind of a soft schedule.
Yeah, no, it's been really interesting though because I haven't and the Longhorns of course haven't really they get there's been a lot of criticism I should say of Chris Beard and his non conference scheduling.
Yes,
even going back to Texas Tech, some people will say like, oh, and they don't play anybody in the non-con. That's really his model,
and I'm fine with it.
Well, yeah. I will say he did address it on Longhorn Weekly
did
this
oh,
year,
what did he say?
And he basically said, if we would have known the team we would have, we wouldn't have booked the schedule we did. But at the time we booked the schedule, Brock Cunningham was our team. So we kind of had to book it a certain way because we had one player on our team.
Interesting.
Okay, so he's saying that that's not necessarily his model, that at Texas he would change that.
He might change it. I'm just saying that's what he said for this year.
It was his model at Tech, though.
Yeah, it was his model at Tech, but I think this year his main thing was that he said that he didn't know who he had on the team. So they kind of, I think he would rather have played a couple of bigger games just to see if they're ready and try and get them ready for conference play, and they're basically going to have this and see the Gonzaga game.
Okay.
It's only two big games to get to play.
Okay. Yeah. No, great. See, that's one man, Patrick Davis, the real MVP, as
you
always.
Yeah,
bringing the insight. Well, Arkansas Pine Bluff is who they're going to play after they play Seton Hall, and I think that's December 14th? I could be a little off about that.
Yeah,
I believe
December 14th.
December 14th.
8 o'clock right here on the horn.
Shout out. So Arkansas Pine Bluff, they
Patrick
lost.
Patrick will be there.
They lost. He will be there.
Front center.
He's always the place to be.
You
want to
go talk to the sexy BMW.
The BMW.
Yeah. He will be the real BMW there that night. Not Blanks Mason, right?
Oh, good for you. There you go. See, okay. Sorry. Right over the head. My bad.
A little Texas history.
Arkansas Pine Bluff lost at Iowa State. This was earlier. This is actually last week, I believe. Arkansas Pine Bluff lost at Iowa State. Like I said, they'll play Texas December 14th. The end score was 83-64. But that wasn't the big storyline that came out of the game. Apparently, Arkansas Pine Bluff, which is at the time, I think they were 1-8. So they
struggling.
Yeah, they were 1-8. Their SWAC team, apparently their coach was so upset by their performance. Solomon Bozeman is the coach's name. That early in the second, basically after the first half, after Iowa State led 38-22, and they came out hot in the second half, scoring on, I think, its first three possessions to push the lead to 44-24. Bozeman wasn't happy, so he called a timeout. And during the timeout, had his team run gassers.
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 Okay.
Do you ever run? Do you play basketball?
I ran gashers.
Okay.
Gashers
gotcha.
Are different than gassers, I guess. Gashers
gotcha.
But it's the same premise.
Yeah.
You go down and touch a certain line, and then you run back. So in football, it's called gashers, and here it's called gassers.
But God, I hated those.
He had them run these during the game.
Like that's unheard
during,
of, man.
During the timeout in the second
half. He called timeout for them to run.
Yeah, he called timeout just for that specific purpose.
That's embarrassing. Run. Look, I do a podcast called Everyone Gets a Trophy, so you can kind of see where I stand on these issues most of the time.
Mid-game discipline.
And I think we've gotten way too soft. This is probably too far, though.
Mid-game
right.
discipline, man.
Yeah, well, it's just embarrassing them.
It is embarrassing them, but they were playing. Hey, he probably was like, you're playing. You're embarrassing me with the way you're playing.
What's his name again? Solomon Bozeman?
Solomon Bozeman.
Sounds like a character.
So, I mean, we thought Chris Beard was pretty hardcore. He ain't got nothing on Solomon Bozeman. That guy.
He's not messing around.
Man, that is
man,
hard.
He must have been pissed to do that.
I wonder what the reaction was of the players at the time. Because they had to be like, are you serious? Coach, you can't be serious.
Well, yes, but this probably didn't come out of the blue. They've probably seen stuff in practice where they know Solomon has this in him.
Yeah, but practice and the game are very different. That's like when your mom and dad discipline you in private at home,
yeah.
Of course they get after your behind, but they don't discipline you the same way in public.
No.
There's always a very stern, like, you know, warning, like,
there's a lot of and
talking between the two, you
all of a sudden I'm a ventriloquist. Not a good one, but
it is.
I swear. I am gonna beat you.
the bombs they drop, the F bombs and MF bombs, I guess.
Oh, you just see eyes. I was looking at my parents' eyes and be like, oh god.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of how I see it. And usually you don't see a coach go that hard on his players in public during a game. That's why during the game, coaches don't just dog cuss the players. They do it in practice a lot.
Yeah.
But in the game, it's like, nah, I'm not going to dog cuss. I'm just going to, you know, in the practice, I'm going to get on the pitch. You know, it's a little different. You try to be a little bit more
Barnes was so good
disciplined
at that.
And subdued.
Some of the nicknames he'd have for players.
It would say all he needed to say?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right, but let me ask you this.
A lot of them started with P.
This is definitely old school coaching. How old do you think Solomon Bozeman is?
That's a great question.
I looked it up. I know his age.
His name is Solomon.
How old do you think he is?
The way you're phrasing it, I feel like he's going to be young.
There aren't a lot of young Solomons.
No, there's not.
Not a lot of young Solomons. Solomons are 40
Bozeman.
And up.
Bozeman.
So I'm going to say he's at least 45.
I'm going to say he's 55.
45.
33 years old.
I can tell he was setting
young
it up.
Solomon.
Patrick Beverly knew I was
younger than all of us.
Oh, yeah. My God. Okay,
now he's black.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you
mean? There's no white Solomons.
What do you mean? Solomon, the first
that
Solomon.
That was fantastic.
Solomon from the Bible? What Solomon from the Bible? What was he? Was he black? Well, I guess if you were asking black people,
he was in the Bible. He probably wasn't white.
Jesus was black.
Say, what was Jesus, Rod?
I don't know. You know what? I'm not getting into that.
What was Babe Ruth, Rod?
You know what? Great point. I hang it up now. You're right, Patrick. Yeah, no white Solomon's out there. It's been proven now.
So Solomon's a 33-year-old brother who's letting these guys have it?
Wow.
He's letting them have it. But yeah, that is 33 years old. That surprises me. But
well, I didn't know. You're right. It's good. I thought he'd be older. That's old school coaching. That's hardcore. So he's a young man. He's really young, 33.
Yeah.
As a head coach of any college basketball team, is pretty young.
Wish I could bottle Patrick's reaction and then me watching your reaction to that. That was fantastic.
What do you mean? Oh, man.
Good stuff. All right, we got some breaking news that is going to affect the Big 12. We'll get to that coming up next. We're talking more college football and more coaching changes.